You're on 121.5, the emergency frequency.
Welcome to the 21.5 Show, a podcast for professional pilots by professional pilots. Join Dylan and Max, both with experience in flight instruction, the airlines, and business aviation, as they talk to a variety of industry experts, share stories, and have a little fun along the way.
Welcome back to another episode of the 21.5 Podcast.
It's the show for the pros.
I hate it when you say that. I don't know why.
I thought that was a catchy line. No? Episode 63, another jam-packed episode. Man, we got mailbags, we've got reviews, we got flight advice.
Let's get to it.
It's a lot going on. First, I wanted to ask you about that XLS crash. We sort of mentioned it a couple episodes ago. I think it was the one with, four fatalities up in Connecticut. Yeah.
You know, it's creepy if you think about it. You realize the two most recent crashes is the airplane you fly and then the one I fly.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, Truckee and 604 and then this.
So I read something online today, and I mean, this seemed like official, like came from the NTSB stating that the parking brake was engaged.
Yeah, the it's a knob that you pull out so that the handle was engaged and that the valve was also in the position of being engaged, meaning like the knob didn't just get pulled out.
It seemed
to be actually engaged.
So I asked you about this because every big turbine airplane I've flown has like a takeoff config, and the parking brake is always one of the things it checks. But that is not the case on the XLS.
Trim, flaps, speed brakes. No parking brake.
Maybe other items. Who can say?
There may or may not be more items that are on that.
I'm sure we'll receive an email shortly. So I guess... You know, so I thought, okay, so maybe they added power and tried to take off with the parking brake engaged, or would it be a scenario where they tried to abort the takeoff, their brakes weren't working, and then they tried to use the parking brake?
I read it really quickly. Yeah. I didn't realize we're going to talk about this. I would have read it closer. But it compared the rate of acceleration to that of previous takeoffs, and it was significantly lower, so which would indicate that the brakes were dragging. So somehow they must have got into a partial parking brake engagement. And if you had the holding short and you had the parking brake engaged, there's no way you're going to that would be very hard to do, I think. But maybe they had them because it's just like a smaller plane deal where you pull them and it traps pressure. So if you didn't, I don't know.
Well, I guess from what I read, that's not the first time that's happened in XLS. So check the parking brake.
Yeah, it would be something that's, I think, tough to do, but certainly as many XLSs are there are out there, and as many takeoffs and landings, sooner or later.
I flew with a guy that got me in a really good habit, and he always did the three green check on the when you're landing, on the before landing checklist, he always checked the parking brake too. That was in the Challenger, it's kind of behind you. So, and it's the close where if you're the pilot flying, it's easy to get at. So it's like, I always like physically just touch it. I don't know. Not a bad thing to do, I think. I mean, landing with, I can't imagine it would be on, but and maybe and there's some airplane.
I'm sure that these poor guys couldn't imagine it was going to be on either. Right. That's just the way this works.
Vigilance. All right. Well, we'll stand by for more information on that, and maybe our listeners will have some info on how that could possibly happen. All right. Let's get right to it. Reviews today, Max. We got a new one. You want to read it?
Love this podcast. I'm approaching a mill retirement, and I'm attempting to learn all I can about life on the other side of the fence. These dudes are a great resource, sharing good, varied info and delivering it in a really enjoyable way. Love the underslated... I just got my eyes checked too. Love the understated humor, intelligent discourse, and so far zero annoying, oh man, that's crazy. Have you tried DMT eye rolling moments? That's pretty funny. Keep up the amazing work. By far the number one aviation podcast currently downloaded in Midtown Sacramento today, 19 September. Ian. That's pretty funny.
Very clever, Ian. Send us your address, info@2015podcast.com, and we'll send you some stickers. Thanks for the good review. Now, see, you laughed because you got the DMT reference right away. I did not. I had to Google it.
Really?
Yeah, because I mean, I sometimes listen to Joe Rogan, but not all the time. But I guess the thing is he asks a lot of guests the same question. When he'll be interviewing them, he'll be like, hey, have you ever tried DMT? So we should try that next time.
It works for him.
So next donation, we got another donation. Sold another can cooler. We've only got two left.
Who did we sell? How many have we sold?
Three. We really? Only got five. Yeah, we were a short little demo to see if people were like it. But Stu M was the latest.
It was probably our
support the show
resounding reviews. And
I know. So thanks to Stu for grabbing one. I've got a couple left.
You won't be sorry.
Yeah, you're gonna love it. Stu, it's very versatile. You can go right from the White Claw to the Tall Boy Bud Light.
Yeah.
I'm looking at you for help.
You sure can. I know. I was just kind of letting you flounder there. Like a guy that can't swim. I was just
anyways, you got a couple left, but if we're going to sell them out, we'll just get more. If you want to donate to the show, you can just visit 215podcast.com. Scroll to the bottom. There's a donate button and helps to support the show. Minimum donation of $60 to get the cane cooler. Up next, Max, flight advice brought to you by our friends at Harvey Watt, sponsors of the program, providers of loss of medical insurance for professional pilots around the globe. If you haven't checked out their offerings, it's harveywatt.com. They have life insurance for pilots, loss of medical insurance. If you're a corporate pilot, you can get it on your own or through your employer. Protect that certificate, harveywatt.com. All right. Read this one because I don't think you've seen this one yet.
Hey, guys. Back in April of 2020, my friend and I ran into Max while deadheading on a Southwest flight back to Phoenix from St. Louis. At that time, we were just completing in-dock at our first regional airline and the pandemic had just begun. We struck up a conversation with Max and he introduced me to your awesome podcast. That's funny. I actually remember that.
Do you remember this?
Uh-huh. Anyway, I have a dilemma that I'm not sure how to proceed with. I already have a type rating in the CRJ and I just got hired with a different regional out of Phoenix that flies the 175, United Express, and the CRJ 900, American Eagle. Yesterday, I was just contacted to complete the assessment for United's Aviate program. With this new regional, should I go back to the familiar CRJ, which I'm already typed in, and lose the ability to fly as a United Express carrier? Or should I fly the E-175, continue as a UAX pilot for the United Aviate program? I have not gotten invited for an Aviate interview yet, but I just submitted their assessments today on 9/21. I'm not sure who to turn to for this question, but I feel your expertise would give me the best opinion on this matter. Thank you so much for your help, guys. Hayden.
Okay, well, this is a very timely email because the entire topic of today's show is for Powell, all these different opportunities. So do you know anything about Aviate?
I'm not familiar with anything beyond the
kind of the published
Zero Hero deal.
Exactly. So I guess we should preface this advice, Hayden, with saying that we're not Aviate experts. But let me give you a couple of thoughts. One, do your research on all of the programs and find out what you're committing to and if there are any...
And what they're committing to.
What they're committing to. And if you enroll in this program, what flexibility do you have later on in the program if you change your mind and go to a different carrier? And will that limit you or prohibit you from doing anything?
Hold on. So with the Aviate program, if you're flying for United Express carrier, you submit these assessments, but you're already a professional pilot.
I don't know the details of that. I don't think we can advise them on that. I don't know enough about the Aviate program. So I think one is make sure you understand the program. Like we don't go through and read that. Figure out if there's any limitations there or what you're committing to. And then number two, and I think this is the one that we can provide some more insight to, should he go fly the airplane he's already flown or go get a new type rating? This to me is pretty obvious.
Yeah. Always go for the new type rating.
Go for the new type rating. The more experience you have, the better. You never know anything
about the future. And not necessarily that like in business aviation, having different type ratings, yeah. I think could be more important than in an airline career. Cause CRJ or E175, nobody really cares. Right.
Yeah.
But it does give you, what were you going to say? Are they going to start? Is there a new column now for underwing mounted engine time versus fuselage mounted?
I've seen people talk about that.
I know. But, you know, you're splitting hairs. So, but the value is actually going through another training program.
Oh, yeah.
That's where
learning a new avionics platform
of aviation is built, is by training on different airplanes, right, with different avionics. There are different flight characteristics with fuselage versus underwing mounted engines. It's something new. You do get used to it. The 7.3 was the first one I ever flew. It was like that, and you're like, wow. I've
never met anyone that in their career that said, boy, I wish I had less type ratings.
Yeah.
So I would go for the new one, and if that benefits the Aviate program too, that's an added bonus. Always stack the deck in your favor as much as you can. Diversity is your only free lunch out there when it comes to experience. This advice was worth exactly what you paid for.
Yeah,
which
I know.
Was zero.
It's just tough because we don't have all the information on the Aviate program, but it doesn't matter because it's still the same kind of pillars that you live by in this business, and that's keep as many options available as you can.
Yes.
And so you can pivot and do whatever, depending on what happens, because aviation is very unpredictable. And I think that the one thing that we've talked about too is on all of these programs, they sound really great in the 2-page advertisement in Flying Magazine or whatever, but read the fine print and see exactly what you're committing to and what they're committing to. And find, you know, because we've also talked about saddling yourself with debt can be a hindrance to your career too, right? So that's something that has to be taken into account.
Yep.
All right.
Okay.
Move along.
Mailbag, very full. Brought to you by our very strong friends at Advanced Aircrew Academy. They're always out there.
Always out there.
What is it that I'm trying to say there? I was trying to say they're always available online.
Always out there.
What are you doing out there?
If you will.
So the other day I got called. Someone was asking me about doing a trip, and they wanted proof of my ADS-B training. I was like, I don't really think I have that. So, you know what the first thing I did? I went to aircrewacademy.com, pulled it up. Sure enough, they have an ADS-B training module right there. Boom, one click. And you can get that purchased and knock out the course and fire it away to whoever needs it. So it's a beautiful thing. I mean, imagine the days before when you had to get training and you would have had to like go somewhere to get the certification. Would have been a drag. Now you can just instantaneously, boom, do the training. Certificates are off. So aircrewacademy.com for all of your training needs. If you're a director of a flight department and you've got training modules and things to satisfy for all your crew, check it out. They are a one-stop shop for everything you need. So all these emails are pretty much pertaining to AQP. We had a huge response regarding the previous episode on the AQP training. Some good and some that kind of brought up some of the points you brought up about, hey, are we teaching some airmanship stuff and are we letting some things go by the wayside? So I think you're going to enjoy some of these comments. I don't know if you're sure. We actually got a lot of these from comments on ProPilot World. So, yeah. First, we'll start off with an email from Patrick. He says, as a career part 135-91 pilot, the AQP episode is very interesting and gave me a peek into the Part 121 training environment. I am fortunate to be a pilot for a corporation with 4 aircraft of the same type and a robust SMS that incorporates FOQA data for non-punitive continuous improvement. Our FOQA vendor measures over 200 data points that our internal gatekeeper uses to compile a quarterly report with analysis on our performance and benchmarked against participating industry peers. Our SMS monitors trends, and our training department works with our training vendor to implement targeted profiles to mitigate events trending in the wrong direction. We have been growing this program for 4+ years with outstanding results. It's our version of Part 91 AQP Lite. Keep the great content coming. Crossing my fingers, you interview Donovan Batiste. We're all crossing our fingers. Yeah. Great email from Patrick. That's cool.
I mean, that is cool. That's kind of what I thought like the future is, right?
Yeah.
And they're living it.
Yeah, exactly. So there is some hope for us in the Part 91 135
that's
world.
That's some proactive
yeah.
safety culture right there. That's impressive.
Yeah, that is really impressive. So I wonder if there's even a way, like they've got 4 airplanes, but he mentions in there that they like work with their FOQA data provider, their vendor, and then they look at analysis participating industry peers.
That's the key, right?
Yeah.
Because even with 4 airplanes, you just don't have the reps to get enough data to really... I guess you'll see a trend, but in certain airports you operate too frequently and you see, oh, we're unstabilized 60% more here or whatever. But I think that I hadn't even really considered that, but that's the way with these smaller flight departments, you have to aggregate all that data together, right?
That's what I was wondering. Well, that's cool that they've got multiple people. Yeah. So awesome, Patrick. Appreciate that. Okay. Here's some comments from Pro Pilot World. I know a lot of us listen to the podcast, but episode 62 that I just listened to today was absolutely fascinating about the AQP model of airline training. Thank you, Dylan and Max, for another excellent episode. And that's from here. You can read this next one.
The great thing about AQP is it's based off of data that can be tailored to specific operators. The downside of AQP is it's based off data that can be tailored to specific operators. Here's the magic sauce. It requires a certificate holder that could otherwise phone it in to invest in their training department and provide the tools necessary to make better pilots, not just settle for standard. Whereas without these requirements, it would be like pulling teeth to get the money out of the board or executives to make changes in the operation. The significant holes in AQP are what led to extended envelope training. The data would lead you to believe bounce landings, gusty crosswind, high altitude stalls, airspeed unreliable, and upsets aren't a problem worth spending money to correct. They just don't happen that much. The problem is when they do, it ends badly. We've lost the basic skills of flying, pitch, and power because the focus is on getting the callouts verbatim. We've lost a basic understanding of avionics and systems because there isn't a switch or button we don't need to know about it. Enter MCAS. We don't need to go back to being able to draw the electrical system freehand from memory, but the pendulum might need to move back to center. There was a fine balance between the economic advantages of AQP and cutting corners. Just like the disadvantage of proficiency checks becomes training for Groundhog's Day. Some things need to be trained, and my personal opinion of AQP has given a little bit too much slack to the airlines. More training is needed, not just more validations and evaluations. EET was a great start, but the FAA needs to get back to regulating for this to work. If you just look for compliance, the bean counter will win in the long term. Lone Star Captain.
I think that goes to what Sam's point was when we asked him, hey, did people embrace this? And he goes, you know, AQP is what you make of it. You know, in each carrier has a lot of latitude to do what they want to do in it. And so like he said, you know, it's the best, it can be based off data and tailored to specific operators, you know, and if you've got a proactive group, kind of like what Patrick was saying, then it can be awesome. And
yeah,
if you have a group that maybe is using it to cut corners. Yeah.
So, it's interesting.
Yeah.
That just made me think of something too. When I guess it's kind of hard to think about training airmanship and practicing that stuff in a simulator. But when I was just recently in Recurrent, we were supposed to have the cockpit procedures trainer, you know, the touchscreen deal, but the sim was wide open because it was a brand new program. So we just went and sat in the sim off motion and we did all the stuff in there and we finished it up and we have tons of time, right? So he's like, oh, what do you want to do? And we take off and we flew out of like Aspen and we were like, you know, we came from the north super high and dropped in over the mountains and flew the visual pattern to land to the north, which is really tight in Aspen. And I flew right over the town and like pitched the airplane up, something you never do. And got basically like a chandelle, like a big low airspeed turnaround stuff. And at the end, I was like, wow, that was real deal extended envelope training. Cause we flew the airplane, like pushed it to the far limit that you wouldn't do in any course of normal training. And we were just kind of screwing around, but I walked out of there. I was like, I actually learned something from that. Like that was, that was really itch. And then like Christian, I set him up in this really tough scenario, right? Like how to get down over the train and where is he going to maneuver to get down to, and I'm like, and I didn't give him any suggestions. I just wanted to see what he would do.
Mm-hmm. This is in the sim?
Yeah, in the sim. And he like crushed, he went like two valleys over and then flew, used that to descend and then came right over the town and landed. I was like, and you could tell he was like, oh, he didn't really know what to do, but then he just kind of figured it out. And
yeah,
it ended up being good training, but not that I'm advocating that should be a course, you know, part of the course, but it's just one of those things where use the time you have to the best of your ability to make yourself better.
There's a longer comment here that kind of ties on to that. I won't read the whole thing, but he says, the problem with the systems approach to training is that the analysts have over-researched and oversimplified the required learning and taken out the muscle memory of actual flying skills. Experience comes in part from making mistakes, small ones, hopefully, that instruct our attitude. Flying Magazine had a continuing section called I Learned About Flying From That, newly minted multi-pilot license first officers. I think he's talking about in some of the other countries that officers have no experience or real background to fall back on. If they didn't see it specifically in the simulator, they have no background to deal with it. Remember on a clear VFR day, a Boeing 777 crashed short of a runway at SFO because the glide slope was out. With the glide slope out, there is not electronic patch for the autopilot to follow.
I think he means path.
Oh. Path, yeah. Without glide slope intercept, the auto thrust does not engage in speed mode. Without thrust, the airplane will land short. Some poor peckerwood got to push up the power or we will hit the ground. Screwing up auto thrust, as I have done many times when we were learning it for the first time in the mid-80s, taught me, along with the training department, just how you can screw up with automation. Turn it off and make it basic. It works. It even works in the Airbus. It's good.
You should, I think at the end of the day, he brings a good point.
Yeah.
You should be able to fall back on the basics, turn everything off and fly the jet.
Well, I think
if you don't have that skill, that is a serious problem.
But here's his point, because I think what we keep looking at is from the perspective that we've had of our training in the United States and not versus like the many, many pilots that are being trained elsewhere around the globe. And that really is, I think, his interesting point there is like, and what's the more likely scenario? They're going to, that companies and airlines are going to go, you know what? These pilots need more stick and rudder skills and more time in the airplane. And, you know, or how can we quickly get them into the cockpit as cheaply as possible? You know what I mean? Like, so I can see it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy because you have these lower experienced pilots. So then you've got to develop this training that is going to work with those people, but then
the choreographed dance where
it is. So I don't know. Overall though, I think AQP is a great thing, and the way they've got it, they can tailor it to each specific operator is awesome, but I can definitely see where people can find some holes in it. But
yeah, that crash was a really good example, along with the MCAS crashes that, given that scenario, neither of those should have been that big of a deal, right? But they were. Well, easy to say sitting here at the podcast table.
Exactly. That's right. Well, we had a huge response to that episode, and so I think we got to do more stuff on training.
I couldn't believe that.
Yeah. It was our most downloaded episode during the release and stuff, so clearly folks are interested in that training stuff. So
certainly not the sexiest subject.
Yeah, but certainly interesting. So if you've got a training topic that you want to explore, shoot us an email. It's info@215podcast.com. And we'll look for an expert in the field, and then we'll have a discussion about it and see if we can't figure more out about the training universe. All right. Well, you took some vacation, and that means that Roy popped in.
I'm very uneasy about this. I've not heard this segment.
Well, many of our listeners will remember Roy, but along with his fun banter and electronics expertise and meme wizardry, he's also works in an official capacity for Delta Airlines. He's one of the lead representatives for the Delta Propel program, and he and I talked at length about the program and just learned a little bit about the opportunities that are out there for students that are out in college right now, and it's incredible. And when you do hear this segment, you're going to be jealous. I can tell you right now.
Of what? That I wasn't there?
Or yeah, I mean, program? No, just of the program and what's available to students now compared to when we were in school. It's awesome. So I think it'll be good. Even if you're not. Fun.
It's getting so much easier because you remember when we were at that stage and we thought about, God, these guys used to have to fly freight with like no autopilot.
I know.
In piston powered airplanes with like straight six pack.
Flying bank checks around and
GPS.
Yeah.
You know, and then I read these books about guys and gals back in the day and it's just, and now.
It's so much easier.
Changed.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? You can either be upset about that. Or you can just accept it.
Yeah.
Because it's going to get easier for every generation until.
Until what, Dylan?
Yeah.
Until we used to talk about the days that people got paid to fly airplanes around.
Then we can all go fly RC airplanes with our buddy Jeff. All right. So coming up is.
Who's Jeff?
Jeff Kersey, remember?
Oh. I'm only hiring people that... That's a good one. Right over my head.
That's right. All right. So coming up is our conversation with Roy about that Propel program. And I'd say it's interesting. Even if you're not a student, even if you're in business aviation, I think it's fascinating to listen to because guess what? The next generation of talent that's coming through, this is the time of opportunities that they're going to have. And this is what the rest of the industry is going to have to compete with. So I think it's good to understand what's out there and what you're competing with. So here we go. When the cat's away, the mice will play. Max is on vacation and I've got my buddy Roy joining us.
Hello.
What's happening, Roy? Roy, you're joining us in an official capacity today, which I'm excited about.
As the first person to use your guest house in a while?
That's right. We're doing an in-person recording. Roy has unlimited access to the soundboard buttons, so that it could be good or bad.
Waiting for you to slide it over to the Donovan Batiste ones.
Should we just cue one up right now and just... There you go. You can pick any of the...
RPMs, they up, baby. Everything humming. Sun setting. We out here. Off them brakes. Let it do what it do. Right rudder. You know how it is out here, Mine?
Mine? As many of our listeners know, you are a first officer at Delta Airlines. You are also the lead liaison for the Delta Propel program.
Yeah, I'm one of three lead liaisons, but I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me today.
So I was under the impression that Delta Propel was an in-flight energy drink that was served until recently. And turns out that I was wrong, but it's actually a program. I don't even know. It's a cadet program to recruit people to come work for Delta. Like, can you explain what this is?
Yeah, sure. The Propel program is actually a multifaceted approach to addressing hiring demand at Delta Airlines. Most of the airlines out there are looking at upcoming retirements, depleting a lot of their pilots' staffing needs. And so the Propel program does that in three ways. The first way is, or one of the three ways, is through the company, and we allow company employees the opportunity to become pilots. So rampers, gate agents, mechanics, whomever, have that opportunity to try the pilot career out. Another tenet of the Propel program is through the community, where we are reaching out to STEM schools, kindergartens, middle schools, all kinds of different opportunities to talk about aviation as a career, and not just piloting, talking about all the other jobs and careers that we have at Delta Airlines and throughout aviation, and to inspire kids to achieve their goals. And then the third most popular part of that is the college program, where we have a program at 14 partner universities right now that grants students an opportunity to have a defined accelerated pipeline to become a Delta Airlines pilot.
Wow. That's an amazing opportunity. Now, many of our listeners know you and I both went to school at Embry-Riddle many years ago, and there was nothing like that at really any aviation university at the time, right?
No, I remember I actually was looking through some of my old college stuff, and I found my college laptop, and it has a sticker on the case that says American Airlines Pilot Program or something like that. Okay. And apparently they had come to campus and had some pizzas and some stickers. And that's all I remember was I had put that sticker on my laptop and that was it.
That was it. There was some like regional airline flow things or something, but nothing, no concentrated effort from the major airlines, I would say, to recruit people into into the fold. And now, I mean, there's multiple major airlines with these types of programs out there. So I thought what would be really interesting today would be to talk a little bit about these programs, help folks to understand what opportunities are out there. And I think also you mentioned the partner universities. If I'm a younger pilot, maybe in high school, thinking about a career in aviation, having access to these programs might, you know, really shape where I go to a university because of this is offered to me. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, you and I can both attest to the fact that most of our opportunities in our careers come from our friends and associates and classmates and roommates in college. And so going to a specified university or program that focuses in aviation, all the opportunities that come just from that in of itself. Right. And now you have the industry, like you said, many different airlines and operators out there that are putting a lot of time, money, and effort into coming to the college campuses and developing these programs and having these opportunities for the students is going to help sway, like you said, high school students and younger into where they want to go, especially if this is a career that they're truly passionate about.
So why don't you walk us through, I'm at one of these universities, I'm a freshman, what am I going to see and what does this program look like to me?
Well, the Propel program has a strong presence on the campuses of our 14 partner universities and hopefully more in the near future. And what we do is every semester, we have a team of Delta pilots that serve as the liaisons for that university. Many times they're alumni of that college, and they're there to talk about what the Propel program is to students, also educate them on some of the minutiae of the industry and airline life. You know, the things that they don't really talk about in class.
Do you hand out copies of Hard Landing? Max and I were talking about doing that on campus.
One of the things we were talking about with the students yesterday was the full circle of aviation. So when you start wanting to learn to fly, you go to a flight school or college or you're a Part 61 place and you're paying per hour and you're trying to find the cheapest, most airworthy airplane that you can find to get your hours in. Right. And then once you get your license, all of a sudden you're trying to figure out how to split time with people, the legal ramifications of what you can accept to pay half of the pro rata share and all that stuff. And so, and then any opportunity to just fly for free, you take advantage of, or sit right seat, help somebody out, whatever the case may be. Then you get your commercial certificate, then you're getting paid to fly. And so now you're finding every opportunity to do commercial things. And then you become an airline pilot, and then you spend all of your days learning how to use the contract to make sure that you can get paid but not have to fly airplanes. So it comes full circle.
That's right.
We talk about a lot of those different things about airline life, like I said, that aren't covered in college classes, you know, schedule, quality of life. We talk about some of the things that make our airline stand out from others as well, and some of the things that we look for out of potential candidates to help the students have those opportunities in college to become not only better pilots or citizens or friends or classmates or what have you, but then they also become better pilots and aviators in their futures as well.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So you're on campus several times a semester. You're getting information out. That's just available to anybody, right? That anyone that wants to come and learn more about that?
Yeah, exactly. We don't limit the participation of those events to anybody that's specifically in part of our program or not. In fact, we encourage everybody to come out because it's a great opportunity to learn more about the industry, their potential careers, and make those connections as well. You know, we'd love for them to come and join us as part of the Propel program, but if they decide to go a different route, we're still glad to help them along the way.
Okay. So let's say you go to some of these events, you're just starting. I mean, can freshmen go to this? Do you have to be a senior or where?
No, not at all. Anybody's more than welcome to come and join us on campus. To become a Propel program participant, however, there are some eligibility requirements. First off, you obviously have to be at one of our partner universities and be part of the restricted ATP program or whatever degree grants you the restricted ATP as part of that. And on top of that, you have to be a junior, senior, or a recent graduate within 6 months. And that's academically, not just being a college 3 years or 4 years. So if you're a transfer student, if you meet the definition of junior, senior academically, then you can apply to the program, as well as everything else that's required of a Delta pilot. For instance, having a first class medical, having a private pilot's license, and then one 141 course in addition to that is another eligibility requirement for Propel. Okay. And a few other little things that we make available to students to make sure that they're very clear of those things when we're on campus as well.
Okay. So I'm a student. I've gone to these different programs. I feel educated. I go, oh, okay. Delta is the company that I want to potentially work at one day. So you fill out an application, you said, and is that once a year or is that once a semester? Or
Yeah, our application window happens in the fall semester, and it's usually for a few weeks. And what we do is we try to get our liaisons on campus to let the students know that the application window is open. Yeah. And then we've also recently created some documentation, and we've been hosting webinars as well throughout the application window to help students out, because you and I have both filled out at least a half a dozen or so airline applications, and these college students haven't. You know, so when we ask for 10 years of living history, work history, questions about driving histories and all those other things, it's just basically the Delta pilot off the street application that we're asking these students to fill out. So we try to help them out. So again, we're on campus letting them know those things, having that information for them, because it is quite a lengthy application. But when you get down to it, if you're successful through all the steps of the program, that's the last application you'll ever have to fill out for Delta Airlines ever.
Hmm. Okay. So I fill out the application and I get into the program. Do I just start at Delta right after I graduate, or when do I get to put on the double-breasted jacket?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a few more gates to step through. One of the things that our program is it's not a traditional flow program. It's more of a defined pipeline that's accelerated to get you to Delta. So if you think when we hire pilots off the street, it's used to be a two-day interview process. Now it's just a one-day interview process. And what we do is we take that interview process and spread it out from their years in college through the regionals and then right before they come to Delta Airlines. So students who are successful in passing through the application review phase will then be invited to complete some testing online that they take care of at home, which is commensurate with Delta pilot selection policy.
And I mean, is that like knowledge testing or personality testing?
No, the first two steps are a NEO personality assessment and a cognitive test. And we'll send some information about those to students who are granted the opportunity to take those assessments. Once they're successful passing that, then we'll have a HR interview. So we're going to have the Delta new hire pilot interview given to college students.
Tell me about a time.
And we will definitely have that catered to their level of experience as well. So we're not going to ask them about conflict resolution questions about captains that are going 280 below 10 or anything like that.
Right.
We're going to have it relatable to their experience and where they're at in their college years.
And is that like an online video type thing, or do you have to go?
No, well, actually, we have a whole separate team of interviewers that are separate from the pilot selection team that hires traditional off-the-street hires that specifically work for the Propel team. And so we'll fly them out to your campus, and we'll have you schedule an interview with them on your campus to take care of that.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's just great career experience. No matter what happens, I mean, to be able to do something like that as a junior or senior,
yeah,
that's pretty awesome.
And now that there's a plethora of people to help assist in those, you know, interviews and testing and things like that, they're coming even more prepared to these, which is great, because it's amazing to see how well these students are doing. Really? Yeah. So once they get to the interview phase, if they're successful through the interview phase, then we come back on campus again. The liaisons from that college or university will host basically an indoctrination training event where we welcome them to Delta Airlines. We offer them what we call the qualified job offer, and something that sets us apart from some of the other programs out there, because students who are successful in this program prior to graduation will have a signed letter from Delta Airlines that says, "Welcome to Delta Airlines."
Wow.
It will outline a few of the steps and processes that they have to complete in order for that to come to fruition. Okay. And then the students will also be given the opportunity to sign what we call the Propel Pledge, which is, again, outlines the requirements of the student to progress from college through the regionals or the military, whichever track they choose, and then how to get to Delta at the end.
That's awesome. I mean, can you imagine if we would have had an opportunity like that to have a conditional job offer as a junior or senior? It's funny because it actually reminds me of my wife, who's a pharmacist. That's what it was like when she was going through school. They had all of the pharmacies out there at her school, and everyone by the time they were a senior already had a job. But it's a testament to the marketplace and the future of what the pilot job needs are going to be for a lot of these carriers.
Yeah, and we see so much great potential out of these students at all these campuses that it's a great opportunity for us to reward them for all their hard work as well. And one of the things that's nice about our program that sets it apart from others is that your signing of your Propel Pledge, your acceptance of your QJO is not anything that holds you specifically to Delta and Delta by itself. So for instance, if you are accepted into the Propel program, but then you decide to go to some other place, we will not hold that against you. And we would still love to help you again throughout your career if you decide to go a different route. And participation in the Propel program is not a requirement to become a Delta Airlines pilot. Propel is literally just one way for somebody to get from where they are now to become a Delta pilot. Okay.
Yeah, I had a question about that later. I was going to say, for all our guys that are regional airline pilots right now listening to this, going, hey, what about, like, does that mean I'm behind everybody else?
No.
Okay, so it's just an extra door for people to get into. Okay, all right, so I've gotten the job offer, the qualified job offer. I graduate to get all my licenses. Now what?
Well, what's great is that most of our partner universities, like you were saying, there's this strong presence of not just the major airlines and the cargo companies and charter corporate military, but the regionals are out there as well. And so most of the regional airlines out there have cadet, bridge, pathway programs, whatever they call them. And so we encourage all of our participants to, or all of our students that come to our events, to explore all of those opportunities. So we want them, you know, so we have students that have been accepted into the Propel program mm-hmm. and signed their pledge and are also members of programs at some of our regional partners like Republic, SkyWest, and Endeavor. And so students are literally graduating from these aviation universities with a little bit of debt that yeah. we're both aware of.
Right.
But also a lot of decisions ahead of them because they basically can have jobs at just about every airline out there. And then they have to decide, well, which one do I really want to work for?
Okay. So I was going to ask you about that. So you can stack it up. So you can get in the SkyWest program. If you know, for whatever reason you want to go work for SkyWest, along with getting in the Propel program and that kind of, you can stack the deck in your favor. Right. And then you get your graduate maybe 200, 250 hours in your commercial, and then what? You got to instruct? Can you go right? You can't go right to the regionals. So what's
next? Not anymore, unfortunately. Yeah. Or fortunately, depending how you look at it. Our program is not only a way to address students' success in having an expedited transition from college life to the mainline life. Yeah. It's also a way to help the university as well. So our program participants are required to instruct at their partner university to fulfill the requirements for the restricted ATP. And so we will have the students continue on campus. A lot of times they're already instructing before they graduate. I mean, it's crazy now. We had a student who graduated from Embry-Riddle and had been accepted into our Propel program, had all the cadet programs from all the regionals signed up as well, and graduated with 980 some odd hours. And so he was in the next class at SkyWest.
Wow.
It's crazy.
That's just ready to go. Yeah. And, you know, you and I both instructed at Embry-Riddle after we graduated. I mean, it's a really seamless path if you can move right from the, you're already comfortable with the university and a lot of the training policies and everything else. And then just to be able to jump right in, instruct, build your time. You don't have to move. You don't have to relocate. I mean, there's a lot of really nice advantages right there to being able to do that. So essentially you instruct to get to your restricted ATP minimums.
Yeah.
And then double-breasted jacket time or not quite?
So once you get to your restricted ATP minimums, again, that's where the responsibility is on the student to decide which one of the two tracks that they want to choose. If they're in the part of the Propel program, one of the things that, again, sets us apart from other programs is that we give the students options to get to Delta. So they can do the traditional route, which is to go fly with any one of the Delta connection carriers once they get their restricted ATP to build their time to come to Delta. Okay. And through that program, if they decide to go the Delta connection route, they'll have to have a minimum of 1,000 hours of turbine time at the regionals and 42 months or less from when they start new hire training at the regional, they will be put into the next new hire class at Delta Airlines.
Oh, okay. I guess I didn't realize that. So I get hired at SkyWest on January 1st of 2020. So 42 months later...
Or less.
Long as I have 1,000 hours.
As long as you have 1,000 hours.
And I have maintained my pledge and done everything, honored my pledge, I guess.
Correct. You fulfilled the further commitments of the Propel program, which involves just a few more reviews and a personality test and an interview with a psychologist. Again, commensurate with Delta Pilot selection policy. And then 42 months or less and 1,000 hours, poof. And then you get your double-breasted jacket.
Then we go. Gold buttons.
Yeah, and that's what, again, one of those other things that kind of sets us apart is we say 42 months or less.
Yeah.
And other programs out there will say what the minimum hour requirements are to transition, but there's no definitive timeline as to when that transition happens. And so our program tells our students, again, if you go the Delta Connection route, 1,000 hours of turbine time at the regionals and 42 months or less, we're hiring, you pass through all the steps, you're at Delta.
Okay, you're hot, but you got to be hiring, obviously, at the time. Delta's got to be hiring.
Yeah, one thing that's been nice is, you know, a lot of questions we get on campus are about, well, what about with COVID? What happened during the pandemic and our commitments to the program? Well, we were fortunate enough that the pilots, the union, and the company all came together to find a way that we had avoid furloughing even one pilot at Delta. So that was nice. A great opportunity for all of our pilots and then the future pilots to realize that we can all come together to help them out. And at the same time, talking about how Delta is one of our core values is honoring our commitments. And so through that, I don't want to, so it's 12, 16 months or however long the pandemic was, whatever you look at as far as metrics, nobody has gone beyond that 42 months. And so we started the program a few years ago and we have students that are coming up on that 42 months, but we're also hiring 1,000 pilots currently. So we have that pipeline of pilots that we need. And so there's no question in my mind that we're going to continue to honor that commitment of 42 months or less.
So I guess one of my
you know, is rich.
Gotcha.
So I guess one of my biggest questions with how these this program works or in general is like, man, you know, we've been through this industry for 20 years, you and I both, and we've seen the ups and the downs and the changes, and there's just an uncertainty, right? How do you structure a program with timelines and everything else when, gosh, we just don't know what the future holds in aviation often?
Well, we've had a pretty good sample rate to figure out what flexibility needs to exist in the program, you know, from bankruptcy through 9/11, the economic downturn, and now the pandemic. So there's a pretty good sample rate of data as far as what contingencies we need to allow the program to work around, so to speak. And when it comes down to the individual student having to have some of that flexibility in their transition through the program, that again, we handle that through the mentor and then the leadership of the team on a one-on-one to make sure that the student is inevitably getting the experience that we want to have out of the student, you know, as if they were just a traditional off the street hire, but providing them the opportunity to continue to progress through the program and gain that experience themselves and to develop themselves professionally, but also incorporating into that a strategy for them to either return back to the program or the not to return back to the program, I guess I should say, to return back to the expected path of the program.
Okay.
So
okay.
Like if they can't instruct at their partner university because their partner university decides to stop flying or they're not hiring, enrollment's down or what have you, we've got 14 partner universities. So maybe we can help out to get you to instruct at one of those other places. If that doesn't work out, we can talk about some other opportunities that we can do to help work with your life schedule as well as your progress through the program, and then how to continue along that path as well to get to Delta.
So flexibility is the key to air power in this program?
Absolutely. And something that is nice to hear because like I was talking about that flight instructor who wasn't able to instruct at his partner university, they were able to come back after instructing somewhere else and then continue through the program. And it's great to know that the program allows that to happen because things do happen in our lives. I mean, we can talk about all the times in our careers where we were supposed to fly this flight, but we couldn't because this happened or that happened or something like that. But we were taken care of, our families were taken care of, and the flight and the passengers were, you know, eventually taken care of as well. And so Delta's the idea of being part of the Delta family, you know, I love a lot of companies like to say that, you know, they say, oh, welcome to the
family.
Welcome to the Circuit City family. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we do for all of our new hires is that first week they come to Atlanta for indoctrination training is we fly their spouse, partner, boyfriend, girlfriend, parent, whoever it is in their life that is truly that important person that has not only been with them through this whole process to get to where they are now at Delta, but we want to honor them as well.
And well, so the sacrifices that person has to make are usually very large.
Exactly. So Delta flies them out, you know, not non-rev. They buy them a ticket.
We recommend starting 4 days in advance.
Fly them to Atlanta, bring them out to the Delta Flight Museum underneath the wings of the Spirit of Delta, the 767 that the employees bought to right when Delta went into bankruptcy. And we host a new hire banquet. And when we introduce and welcome the new hires and are given their first set of Delta wings from the senior vice president of flight operations, they bring that spouse, wife, husband, girlfriend, partner, parent, whomever it was important to them with them. They're invited up to meet them as well. And then they shake their hands and they say, welcome to the family. And then they also give them a phone number that says, if you ever need to get a hold of your husband, wife, girlfriend, boyfriend, partner, spouse, whatever, and they're on a trip, you call this number and we'll get it taken care of. Wow. And so there's companies that say that, you know, when you're here, you're family or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I've seen it throughout my career at Delta Airlines that it's not just lip service. It's a lot of heart service as well. And so it's great to see that continues through programs like this as well, where we're talking about college students and being that sort of in that family relationship with them as well to help them through their careers and deal with any issues or hangups or deviances from the program that need to be dealt with, you know, that continues to them as well.
You heard it here first, Roy boldly saying Delta is above Olive Garden in the family company rankings.
Just don't have as many breadsticks.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. The salad is not bottomless, but
if they're Biscoffs, not breadsticks.
That's right. Oh, I like that. Like, we can talk about these programs and timelines and everything. Roy and I have been pros for what, 20 years, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only thing that I can pass along to a student is that everything in the aviation industry dynamic from a who knows what could happen. But I think what you can do with these types of programs is stack the deck in your favor as much as possible. And, you know, and if an opportunity like this had been available to me when I was a student, man, that's awesome. And it's not like, I mean, you're not charging money for this, are you?
No.
So it's kind of like, why wouldn't you do an option like this? Have this in your back pocket. We never know what's going to happen out there in the aviation industry. And if you've got an advantage like this, I think that's huge.
Yeah. And I keep saying what sets us apart from other people. But one of the things that does make us different from our competitors is that if you join our program because you're stacking the deck in your favor and we'd love to have you and help you along your career, but then you decide that, you know, you don't want to fly for us. And while we're going to be sad and, you know, we'll find someone else to fill that double-breasted dinner jacket for you, we do not, if you decide later in life that you want to come work for Delta, your voluntary dismissal from the program will not prohibit you from ever being hired at Delta ever again. Some other programs have you sign exclusivity contracts or have clauses in them that require you to commit to the program, or if you do not, then you can no longer work for that company ever again.
You're talking about other airlines.
Okay. Other airlines, correct.
So this is part of why I wanted to do this series on these programs is there's some diligence that is required, and this is a tough thing. If I'm a high school or college student, I probably don't even know the right questions to ask, or it doesn't occur to me like, oh, if I sign up, well, of course I want to fly for this airline because, you know, they're awesome and they're always going to be around and I'm going to sign an exclusivity. Yeah, no problem. To me, that's a huge thing because you just never know where this career is going to take you, where life's going to take you. Maybe you meet your significant other and they're not interested in living in any of the domiciles of the career. You know, I mean, there's just so many things that you just don't understand. So I think doing your research on these programs is really important.
Absolutely. And I think that's one thing that drew me to this program was that we just want to help students progress through their years at college, through the regionals, and then to mainline. And if it so happens to be with us, awesome. If it's with someone else, awesome too. We're glad to help. And one of the things that our program has stronger than others is that students who are accepted into the program will be given a Delta pilot mentor. So as a college student, you'll have a pilot who's gone through what you've gone through, you know, a few years prior, and will be there to answer those questions because they're going to change. Because, you know, when we got hired at our first jobs, we didn't know what we were doing.
Yeah.
you know, we didn't really have a lot of friends or family that were really mentoring us throughout the whole way. But we want to do that with our visits on campus, where we're talking to students about different topics about the industry and the future of their careers and things like that. And then having someone to be that person, to be that point of contact through that process of being at the college, through the regionals, and even through their first year at Delta Airlines.
If you're making a life decision, I think that's an additional resource you can have. You know, hey, should I move here? Hey, you know, I'm thinking about getting married. You know, what should my spouse know about the industry, or, you know, that kind of stuff. That's great resources that we didn't have.
And it's somebody that's gone through that process that knows what you're experiencing. And, you know, it was great as when we were in college, the internet was starting to become this great repository of information. And now there's just a plethora of information out there and opportunities to get information about things. But now we're starting to realize more and more that it's not just about what's available or the information, it's about the relationship behind that information. And that's why that mentorship part of our program is something I'm truly proud of, that they put that in the program, because it's one of the strongest tenets of the program that gives the students more benefits than they could imagine, because it's a true, honest to goodness person, like you said, that they can call with any questions about anything, you know, and they're there to help them throughout their career and celebrate with them as well. We actually, you know, when COVID hit, we weren't able to do it, but we're hoping that this spring we fly all of the recent participants, new participants to the Propel program out to Atlanta. We try to get their mentors to come out there as well, so they can meet them face to face if they haven't already. And then we have a couple of days where we have some fun and talk to them about their future careers again, have them listen to some senior flight ops leaders talk about a few things, and just have a good time doing it.
Man, that's really cool. Well, you know, you just said something which reminded me of a different tangent I wanted to go into, and that is that the internet is a repository, okay? So I want to discuss and contemplate, as a student in college, we were really lucky that really social media wasn't around, right? For better or worse. And I think if you're in college now, it can be very difficult if you're in kind of the college age to understand that the things that you distribute online, I mean, they follow you around, right? And I don't know that HR people can admit to what they can and will check, but I would imagine that, you know, you have to be conscious of what you're doing, and it and stuff will follow you around in your career, you know, from college age even. And if you're in a program like this and you're going through these HR interviews, I think it gives you a little bit more of like, hey, I have a conditional job offer. I've got a responsibility. I have things lined up for me. And it makes you conscious of what you're putting out there and that you're under a little bit of a microscope, which you're going to be for the rest of your career in a way. So I think it's good training, and it can maybe even prevent you from making a mistake in college that you never even would have thought about. So I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that, or have you, I don't know what you can say, but.
What could I say? I can say a lot, but you're absolutely right. You know, there's, we live in a world now where nothing gets deleted and things can be misinterpreted.
Yeah.
You know, context is lost and people can take what you say and turn it into something that was not your intention at all. And so that's why, you know, we are very strong with our program to be on campus, to make sure the students are getting the absolute correct information up to date of the program and how things are going with the industry. You know, we're dedicating a lot of time, money, and effort to make sure that we have those open lines of communication. Yeah, we want the students to understand that things aren't going to go away on the internet. And so just to have a little bit more responsibility in what it is you're sharing with the world, you know. Yeah. But there's also a great opportunity to share a lot of great things as well. You know, we try to highlight a lot of our program participants through our social media to let students who are interested in the program or questioning the program can maybe find someone that they relate to that's had successes through the program. Mm-hmm. And that's through social media, you know?
Yeah. I don't want to make it sound like, oh, you know, that when you're through school, you have to limit your speech so much. I think what the lesson is, especially when you're in college, no matter what you're doing, you just have to be conscious of, as we've seen over the years, like stuff can come back to bite you, and you just have to be cognizant of the potential ramifications down the road. So I'm not trying to paint, you know, Delta into a certain quarter or anybody
no,
else.
No,
really,
no, 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 no.
I think it's just a, like you take all these classes in college, you know, in navigation and, you know, and physics, there should probably be a social media consequences class or something too, you know?
Well, and it's interesting you bring that up because that's one of the things that we're trying to do with what we call these Delta days on campus is try to help the students have that full rounded education and help fill in the gaps where their experience isn't quite there yet so that they can be even better. A lot of us volunteer our times to be part of advisory boards with our partner universities as well. And one of the things they love to ask us is what sort of technology or software or, you know, procedure do we need to instill in our students to make them better? And from every person across the different aviation industries that are part of these groups, we always say the same things. It's the soft skills. It's the ability to have conversations with people. It's having the ability to stand in front of a group of people and present on a topic. You know, it's being socially responsible. You know, what does integrity mean to you? A big thing for Delta is servant leadership. What does that even mean? And how do I, as a college student, find opportunities to not only learn what it is, but to gain experience being a servant leader? And so that's what we do on campus is we're trying to fill in those gaps as well and relate to the students and show them that they can have a better career than you and I had ever imagined or ever will have.
Right.
You know.
Well, definitely for me, yeah.
Me as well.
It's funny. Well, it's funny, you know, because I talk to so many of the career services companies and we do a lot of stuff with them. And it's like, they're like, you know, 80% of what we do is teach pilots soft skills. And that goes on to a lot of like personality traits that are dominant in pilots and some other things too. But yeah, I think that's such a great point. Like those soft skills have served really well, you know, and.
But you got two sponsors for the podcast, right?
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So let's quickly recap and then I have a couple extra more questions. So I go, I sign the application, I go through the process as a junior or senior, I instruct at the partner university, get on at the regionals, Delta Connection Carrier, get my 1,000 hours or 42 months within 42 months. Do you have, so is it 42 months and you have to have 1,000 or like what if you had like 900 hours and you hit that 42 month?
The 1,000 hours comes from, again, pilot selection policy. That's just Delta pilot off the street minimums.
Okay. You know?
And so we figured 42 months is ample time for them to not only get the 42 months, but to also find opportunities to do something else at the airline as well. The Propel pledge encourages students to seek opportunities to upgrade or find opportunities to serve in like an instructor or safety role or things like that. To give them an opportunity to have the experience that we see from a lot of our off the street hires as well.
Okay. And I mean, just to give folks perspective, if you don't understand like how much you'd fly at a regional carrier, I mean, 600 hours a year is pretty doable.
Yeah. And now that a lot of them are short and have 150 and 200% for open time trips, they're flying a lot more.
Yeah. So, I mean, knocking out 1,000 hours just over 3 years, it's not going to be a challenge.
Yeah. So it's 1,000 hours or 42 months or less if they do the Delta Connection route. And then, like I said, we also have a military route. So if the student decides that they want to serve our country versus flying for one of the Delta Connection carriers, they would go get a Guard or Reserve duty on their own. And again, we have some military people that we can kind of help the process, but the responsibility is on them. And once they become mission qualified, it's 42 months or 42 months or less and 750 hours of time in that aircraft. So, you know, Delta traditionally hired more military pilots right. than civilian. And so one of the things that sets our program apart from others is that we give the student that option. If they do want to do that route, serve our country, we're all for it and we love it. We love them for it and giving them a pathway to come to Delta as well.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. A lot of flexibility in that. Okay. So then you serve your time in the military or the regionals, and then you step up to Delta. And once you arrive in a new hire class at Delta, are you basically the same as another new hire there?
Yeah, exactly. You know, your seniority is going to be dictated just like every other pilot in a new hire class. The last four of your social, 9999 first and 0000 last, if I remember that right. And then, you know, your data hire for travel and all that stuff will reset back to where it is. Because one of the things that we offer our students is within 6 months of graduation, one of those gates that they have to cross to continue to be in the Propel program is a mid-phase review. Again, 6 months plus or minus from graduation, where they kind of commit to which path they're going to go, military or Delta Connection. Yeah. And then we have them complete a little bit of training to understand how to list for flights and non-rev etiquette and things like that. And then we give them, their spouse, their family, their parents, travel benefits on Delta Airlines, just like any other employee.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. That's smart, because then you can learn right out of the gate when you get bumped off flights and everything else. Like, this is welcome to the career.
Show you how to get the really cheap hotels.
Exactly. Marry me and fly for free. That's actually really cool. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So they start just new hire, just like everybody else. And we hope that their mentor is still with us and part of the program. So they'll have that same mentor through Propel, their time in the Propel program, through their first year as well.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So as you're going along. And I mean, the mentors don't even have to teach you how to like do JEP revisions and manual revisions, like all the things I could never figure out as a first year guy. And
oh yeah. Like how to sign into the computer and then print out a trip sheet and all that stuff. Now it's all gone. Like, download this app and swipe left and you're good.
So much easier. Oh, that's really cool. I'm excited that you broke that down. I'm a little bit jealous.
Yeah,
of the kids, I'll be honest.
It's a great program. These students have unprecedented opportunities, and you know, I'm just ecstatic that I have an opportunity to be a part of this, because you know, that's kind of part of it, is when I was in college, there wasn't anything like this, you know? And so now that there's something there, I'm like, this is amazing. This is a great opportunity. And I want to dedicate my time and my effort, my talents, to make sure that not only is this program continue and is successful, but these students continue through the program and are successful and have just amazing careers.
And I think we should mention, you know, like when we talk about going through these aviation university programs, we kind of mentioned it before, you're making a really significant investment to do that, right? And so this is one of the benefits of making that really significant investment. And I think if you're going to make, to have the resources available to find out more about what the career is really like, even if you don't choose to go down that Delta path, but figuring that kind of stuff out while you've got this significant outlay of capital, you know, that's a really good return to help you figure out. Because we didn't understand like what the lifestyle, there was no way to know a lot of that kind of stuff. And so maybe you go through this and you go, you know what, this doesn't sound like it's going to fit me. Or, oh, you know what, it really sounds like it would be really smart to live in base, or, you know, and maybe I should start planning on living in a Delta hub city or whatever it is. But I just think there's a lot of that information that is, can really add a lot of value if you know how to ask the right questions of your mentor. So, all right, we had a couple of questions on social media. I threw them out there, Roy. I'm going to actually check here. Okay, so let's say that I'm just finding out about this for the first time. I'm in like a community college program or something. I'm doing some Part 141 flight training. Is it too late? Like if I'm a sophomore or something like that, and I wanted to transfer to a partner school, like if I already have my commercial, am I still allowed to do it? Like, can you talk a little bit about that?
I think a lot of that is university dependent. Okay. And so what I would say is if you're in that situation where you have a few ratings, you have a few classes, and you want to explore becoming a part of the Propel program, then you're going to have to talk to the office on the campuses, like the people that determine whether or not your classes and credits can transfer over.
Admissions or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
And then the biggest thing that's changed since when we were in college is this whole restricted ATP thing, you know, which basically outlines exactly what class you need to take, exactly what flight course you need to take so that you can get your ATP with less than 1,500 hours. So talking to the partner universities that their admissions offices to see if those things would transfer would be a good start. But then also remember that the Propel program is not, you're not required to be a member of the Propel program or a part of the Propel program to become a new hire at Delta Airlines. We're going to continue to source pilots from our traditional hiring methods, you know, our Delta Connection carriers, in addition to all the other regional carriers out there. A gentleman like yourself that fly corporate that want to come fly for the airlines, as well as military and people that just have the minimums and gain the time and the experience and the necessary requirements elsewhere. We're still going to hire from there as well. Propel is just one additional way to do it. And like we were saying, a great opportunity for students to have that defined pathway from college to Delta.
Okay. Yeah. We had another kind of similar question asking about, hey, what about the part 61 flight programs? Can I participate, or will there be an opportunity at some point in the future to participate? And that, I mean, just from kind of what I'm hearing, that sounds like that's going to be a really tough to add a, that kind of a lot of unknowns, I guess, with those kind of programs. So I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into the selections of what universities we partner with for this program, and certainly well above my pay grade. However, we are exploring opportunities to interface more with people in different facilities, you know, high schools, kindergartens, even talking about aviation, such reaching out to community organizations like OBAP, NGPA, Women in Aviation, things like that, to give them the same sort of benefit of what we're doing to the students as far as the mentoring goes and helping them like progress through their careers. As far as a program, like you said, it's something that probably not going to happen. But like I said earlier, it's not required to be part of the program to be hired, and we'll continue to source pilots from elsewhere.
Last thing, just because I know the nature of pilots and what they're like, you're going to have pilots that are at a regional airline right now, and they're thinking, oh, these Propel guys, they're cutting the line. I'm getting screwed. And I mean, just from what I'm hearing, you're kind of under additional scrutiny from the time you're in college all the way through. I mean, you're kind of continuously interviewing for a job, right? For like multiple years, maybe 3-4 years in a row. So, I mean, I wouldn't say it's more of a line cut, but you're getting an opportunity to get to a carrier, yes, in kind of a streamlined fashion, maybe, but there is a sacrifice that you have to make to do that, right? It's not like you just kind of show up and I have a pulse and I go in. So I don't know. What would you say to anybody that was kind of questioning that?
The students that are, I have, you know, experience working with on campus, getting to know them and learning each other's paths and talking about how they're progressing through the program impress me greatly as far as how professional they are, how courteous they are, how respectful, you know, they embody the Delta rules of the road and they don't even know what they are. Well, we told them later at a Delta Day presentation, but they are just amazing, consummate professionals that are just amazing aviators doing all kinds of great things out there. And the people that, you know, cannot be part of the program or people that are further ahead in their career thinking that's a little bit unfair, it is, because these students are, like I said, amazing. So the onus is on you to figure out how to catch up with them. You're already ahead in hours and experience and things like that. But how do you make up those gaps? How do you exemplify the core values of Delta when you're flying for a different carrier like these students are doing in college, mm-hmm. you know? So there's a great opportunity to do all those things. And it's the same stuff we tell all of our friends. You know, you can't rest on your laurels that you're a 3,000-hour left seat RJ captain and that somebody's going to hire you. What are you doing to set yourself apart? Right. And like I said, these students are doing it above and beyond what I could have ever imagined they'd do. They're just amazing students. It's so great to work with them. So that's where you got to catch up with them. Don't worry about the program. Worry about what else is they're doing on their resumes and with their experience.
It's two easy ones. Outside the cockpit experience and soft skills. What do you, I mean, honestly, seriously, I mean, like,
yeah, exactly.
That's it. What, how are you working on those? So, and, you know, like my mom used to tell me all the time, the fair only comes to town once a year. You know, life is not fair. And aviation isn't fair. And you know what? It's probably a really good lesson for anything else, because it doesn't matter how good of a pilot you are, your knowledge, and a lot of times so much of this industry is based on one thing, and that's just timing. And that's just the nature of things, you know, and that could be upgrade or hot, you know, getting hired or anything else. And a lot of that stuff's out of your control, and people that get worked up about things that are out of their control, man, it's going to be a long career.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's reminding me of a story.
Because we like to end every episode with a story.
I don't know if you want to end on this one. But when you're talking about things being fair, I had a layover in Singapore, and there's these beautiful indoor rainforests and flower gardens. And I wouldn't call myself a green thumb at all. I could barely keep my grass green. But there were, in the center of one of these buildings, just tons of orchids. And there's just lines of tourists that are just waiting to get pictures underneath the orchids. And they're beautiful, all different colors, all different shapes. I mean, it's just impressive, you know? But right at the end of the line where everybody's waiting, there's this one flower, and I don't know what it was. And I tried to find a picture of it, but I can't. But it was just this like little ball of like twigs, and it had some like fuzz on it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was beautiful, but it wasn't an orchid. It wasn't white. It didn't have green. It didn't have yellow. It didn't have beautiful flowers. It didn't smell good or anything like that. but it was beautiful in of itself, you know, and it made me think about like, you know, my mom never told me anything like that, but seeing that flower and I was like, life isn't fair, you know, it's beautiful. Like you just have to see the beauty in those things and to see that one little flower with all of its little webbed contraptions. I don't know. It's just really cool, but nobody was waiting in line for it. Just me.
You just wanted to flex about your Singapore overnight.
Those were so good. I miss those. I truly miss those. Yeah.
But you're flying the future machine now, the 220. So
yeah, it's been a great airplane. Here's a little card for you that talks about all the fun facts about the A220.
Oh, the emergency exits over the wing. Okay, good.
I actually pull this out every time we taxi under the bridge in Denver just to make sure that the tail height is lower than the height of the bridge.
Look at that, 109 seats.
It's a great airplane. I've really been enjoying it. It's the passengers absolutely love it. It's really comfortable. It's very quiet. Since they're new, they're clean, but all of our planes are clean. If there's anything that happened out of COVID, it's that people paid more attention to cleanliness of things. And it goes to some great places too. You know, my Oakland layovers is actually some of my favorite layovers.
There's a hot waterfront scene down there. I don't know if folks have been there.
Oh, but, yeah.
It's pretty nice.
And probably one of the best Euros I've ever had domestically.
Ooh.
So.
All right. Maybe Oakland destination guide up next. I love it. Well, Roy, if folks want to someday share a cockpit with you and get that double-breasted jacket, how can they find more information about the Propel program?
You can head to our website, which is propel.delta.com. If you have any questions, feel free to email the team at propel@delta.com. Propel is also on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And even if you're not a member of one of these partner universities, if you just happen to be by and you'd love to come join us, we post all of our events to our social media to let students and the community know that we're going to be in town. And so we'd love for you to come and join us, hear a little bit more about the program from our college liaisons. And like I said, any other questions, you can always just email the team and they'll be happy to reply to your question.
Hashtag not an energy drink.
Yeah.
I learned something today.
It was funny when we first started the program, we were talking about everything we're going to do on campus and how we're going to set ourselves apart. And somebody in the back of the room was like, so are we going to have Gatorade at our events? And someone's like, why would we have Gatorade? And they're like, oh, they're the company that make Propel energy drinks or the water. Like, oh, no, we're not going to do
that. No, we're not going to do that. We have an agreement with Powerade.
Not a Coke product.
I love it. Well, thanks for taking the time to join us. And I'm jealous and excited for the students in the programs that can take advantage of this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's amazing. And you'll see that it's only going to get better from here. So I'm just thankful to be a part of it and excited to see where these students' careers end up.
All right. Thanks, Roy.
Thank you.
Let it do what it do, baby.
All right, that is episode 63. Thanks so much to our friends at Harvey Watt, the Advanced Aircrew Academy, Roy, and the Delta Propel program for coming on to talk a little bit about what they're offering students. And thanks to you, our listeners, for all your emails, donations, reviews.
Don't forget to send Donovan Batiste a DM.
Yeah.
Promoting us to him to come on the show.
We got to get this guy.
We're
closing in. A couple more weeks, we've got some more interesting content coming up, so stick around. If you haven't,
super interesting.
If you haven't subscribed on your podcast player, do that right now, and it'll auto-download, and then Max and I will be in your pocket every couple of weeks.
All right. Let's wrap this up.
All right.
I've had enough.
Just remember, guys, flexibility.
It is the key to air power.
See ya.
Vanguard.
The statements made in this show are our own opinions and do not reflect, nor were they under any direction from any of our employers.